Today is Tuesday, March 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Europe is now the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic as lockdowns amplify.
You cannot fight a fire blindfolded, and we cannot stop this pandemic if we don't know who is infected.
Growing concerns of an economic COVID crash, the world seems at a standstill.
First one-on-one debate aired on CNN by the Bernie Sanders United, criticizing President Trump's handling of the pandemic. Sanders saying the president simply needs to shut up.
Also ahead, the virus is not stopping several Democratic primary elections from taking place today. It's all on today's International Edition. The World Health Organization on Monday called on all countries to ramp up their testing programs as the best way to slow the advance of the coronavirus pandemic. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus at a press conference in Geneva said, without testing, cases cannot be isolated and the chain of infection will not be broken.
We cannot stop this pandemic if we don't know who is infected. We have a simple message for all countries. Test, test, test. Test every suspected case. So far, we have seen epidemics in countries with advanced health systems, but even they have struggled to cope. As the virus moves to low-income countries, we're deeply concerned about the impact it could have among populations with high HIV prevalence or among malnourished children. That's why we're calling on every country and every individual to do everything they can to stop transmission.
Tedros also said he is deeply concerned about the spread to low-income countries, as even nations with good health capacity are struggling to cope. The World Health Organization also said Europe is now the epicenter of the outbreak. For the very latest developments on the virus from Europe, we are joined by reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
More and more countries, Catherine, are taking extreme steps to try to stop this virus from getting worse, to contain it. And my understanding is that French President Emmanuel Macron is also stepping up efforts significantly. What can you tell us?
Yes, from midday French time on Tuesday, people will not be able to leave their homes in France. The president has said that the country is now in a state of war. He said this is a health war. There is an invisible enemy out there, and everyone has to stay at home. Just after he made this announcement to the nation in an address, the interior minister came on television and fleshed out details of this and essentially what it means for a period of at least 15 days. People will not be able to leave their homes unless it is to go to the shops, to go for a medical appointment. Essentially, that's it. When you leave home, you will have to write down what they call in French an attestation, a certificate to say why you are leaving your house. And if you don't have that and police catch you, you will then be fined. So these are new measures that will go in place. Essentially, the president said they have to stop the spread of the virus, and they can only now do that by limiting the number of people who come into contact with each other each day. He said if they don't do that, then everyone who moves around outside will be endangering the lives of everyone else, and particularly those who are dear to them.
What about if you, say, have a dog that you need to take out and walk or relieve itself?
Well, that was very interesting. That came up with the interior minister, who said, yes, people can go out, get some fresh air if need be, and you can take your dog out as well. But, he said, you can only go out on your own with your dog. You cannot use that as an excuse to go for a walk with your partner, or even to perhaps meet up with someone else who's got a dog and you walk along together. No, he said, you can take your dog for a walk. You have to sign this piece of paper before you go to say that that's what you're doing, and you have to make it a very short trip, and you have to come straight home. You have to do it within a certain perimeter of your home. It cannot be, for example, you can't go and take your dog on a 10-kilometer walk. Mm-hmm. No, it has to be nearby.
What about the rest of Europe? Obviously, there are borders all over the place in Europe with other countries. Are other nations there also getting even more serious as in France?
Yes, indeed. And in fact, one of the major measures that the European Union has put in place in the last few hours has been that the external borders of the European Union are now closed. They will only be open for those European Union nationals who are coming home. You will only be able to cross borders within the European Union if you work in another country. So, for example, if you live nearby the border and you need to cross that border to go to work, goods can also move. But when looking across the whole of Europe, you've pretty much got the same. You've got in Belgium, you're looking at shops being closed. Right across in the east, Finland, there's a state of emergency there. Borders are closed. People aged over 70 have been told to go into quarantine. In Germany, same thing. Borders are closed to France, Austria, and Switzerland. We've also got in Spain, there's a complete lockdown there, a 15-day state of emergency. The same in Switzerland. State of emergency, shops, markets, restaurants are all closed. So you're seeing the whole of Europe essentially go into lockdown. Again, the message is there need to be fewer people out and about. People have to stay home. The whole idea is to stop the spread of the virus. They've realized already that it's there, it's in communities as well. They are saying you need to keep at home, stay at home, because the health services, even though they're very advanced and it's free at source, the health services really are going to come under strain.
Okay, I really want to end it there because that was a really good way to end it. But I just thought, I don't know, I may not use this next one, but let's put it in here.
Okay.
We heard a lot about everything closing in France, including grocery stores. So how are people going to have enough food?
Well, exactly. Good question. This announcement from President Macron was expected. So some food stores will be allowed to stay open. You'll still be able to order online. There will be some groceries being able to be delivered. But essentially, if you haven't got a stock, then you're going to be looking at every day, hoping that your small local store is open and that it has on the shelves food that you want.
For the next 15 days, the United States government wants Americans to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people at a time. They want schooling to be done at home and discretionary travel avoided. The announcements came Monday by U.S. President Donald Trump. We get more now from VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
The president in the White House briefing room also said people should not patronize bars or restaurants and not unnecessarily socialize.
As we combat the virus, each and every one of us has a critical role to play in stopping the spread and transmission of the virus.
As the president spoke, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 13%. Its worst performance since the start of the coronavirus crisis. Asked about the plunge, Trump said markets will boom again once the pandemic passes. But he acknowledged in the meantime, the economy could go into a recession. Steve Herman, VOA News at the White House.
So where do things stand? Has this virus peaked in the U.S. and elsewhere? And why do some people who are not at high risk get sick while others don't? Joining us to answer these and other questions is Dr. Arthur Kaplan, professor of bioethics at New York University Langone Medical Center and the founding director of the Division of Medical Ethics. Where do you believe we are on this so-called curve?
I think Americans are doing better. Social isolation, people staying at home has started to catch on. People are doing it more. That's the good news. The bad news is it's uneven. President Trump, in a press conference, called for more social distancing and social isolation. And I think that's good because he's been a little bit in denial about this. And I fear that many of his strongest supporters haven't been doing distancing and isolation. So I think we're on the right track. We're a little behind the eight ball, should have been doing it sooner. And remember, the point here is not to make the virus so much go away, But as we've seen in Italy, if you get huge demand in a particular region, it can swamp the healthcare system. You can spread the cases out by slowing down the infectivity rate to something lower. Then you can avoid having a crunch on the hospitals.
Right, which sounds like we are not prepared in this country for what could potentially come. It sounds like this is going to get worse before it gets better.
I think we're going to see it get worse over the next couple of weeks. I think one thing is happening is America has more test kits, more testing is going on. There's a lot of infection out there, no doubt about it. We're going to pick it up. It's not that it's getting worse. It's that we're going to see what's been circulating around out there for a while. But that will scare people. We have to try and calm them and say, look, it's not that the pandemic is growing worse and worse. It's that we're just seeing what the extent of it is right now. Somebody said to me, do you think you've been exposed? And I said, absolutely. I work around students. I work around a healthcare center. My wife is a hospital administrator. I can't imagine I haven't been exposed to this virus. Now, maybe lucky I've been able to fight it off or I only had mild symptoms. But I suspect in most American big cities, people have been exposed. They just don't know it.
So we've basically been just interacting and doing our thing and going about our business while many, many people have it. So if this were to quiet down and get under control, is it likely that we'll be back in this situation in the fall or winter?
That's a great question. And I think the answer is it is likely that we will get the rate of infection to fall low. But we're going to face a political and social decision. Is that enough to take off the isolation, the distancing, the open the restaurants, bring the bars back, bring the sports back? It's not that it's going to go to zero. I think we're going to have some disease circulating out there at a very low level once we get through this first wave. And then I am absolutely certain it's going to come back. We don't have a vaccine. That's what we need. People who are anti-vaccination should be kicking themselves in the butt that they caused us not to have enough vaccine production, not to have enough companies and facilities and attention paid to vaccine preventable diseases. It's our only solution in the long run to beating this thing. So in the short run, I think we got one more winter where we're going to go through the same stuff as the rate may rise again of the disease.
For those of us who, like you said, you probably have been exposed, who may have been exposed and even would test positive but don't have any symptoms, are we building any kind of immune system?
I wish I could answer the question of building up immunity. I think we are, because every single virus that we know about tends to confer some immunity. But, you know, it's possible to catch the same thing again. I think that's possible. I believe it's possible with Ebola, which is a virus. The flu, I'm not sure, but I think you can be reinfected rarely with that. So this may be a virus that does permit reinfection, even if you've had it or been exposed to it. We don't know. Hopefully, somewhere, China, Italy, Iran, here, somebody is surveilling a group of patients to see, we know you've been exposed, we confirmed a test, let's say if you get it again. And we'll start that in the U.S., I hope, putting some people under surveillance just to establish this too. But we really don't know. By the way, that's what makes the British approach dangerous. They're not isolating and doing all the social distancing. As far as they know, the pubs are still open, schools are still open, they're still allowing people to mingle. They're going after herd immunity, saying, well, let's let everybody get infected, and then when it comes back, we'll be in better shape. But that risks obviously killing the weak and the vulnerable, and it isn't clear that you can't get reinfected yet.
And you mentioned the weak and the vulnerable. We hear a lot about the elderly getting it. I just heard a story about someone under 40 being extremely sick in a coma from this, and a newborn that was infected in Europe.
It looked like they are really dangerous for the people over 65. It's not that you can't get it as a newborn or a child or even a healthy adolescent or adult. There are cases, but there just aren't many of them, which tells me that our immune systems are capable of fighting this thing off. There may be people who have a particular genetic makeup that they don't understand, that we don't understand, that makes them a little more vulnerable to the virus. There may be people who have underlying diseases that we didn't know about, maybe they didn't even know about, that makes them prone to get it. But generally speaking, the danger is out there for the elderly, I would say. That's the group that really has to be protected.
Dr. Arthur Kaplan, professor of bioethics at New York University Langone Medical Center and founding director of the Division of Medical Ethics.
Coronavirus is not just a health crisis, it's fast becoming an economic crisis as the world seems to come to a standstill. Stocks on Wall Street tumbled once again Monday, triggering halts to trading designed to slow panic selling that's gripped markets across the globe in recent weeks. The latest sell-off came despite Sunday's strong medicine administered by America's central bank, which slashed interest rates to nearly zero. Wall Street Monday saw its biggest free fall in the markets in 33 years and its worst one-day drop in history. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 3,000 points, with stocks losing 13% of their value over what have already been low prices. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ also took a nosedive, each down 12%. Investors were reacting to President Donald Trump's forecast that the worst of the coronavirus outbreak could last well into the summer. Some analysts say at this point, only time can cure the nation's economic woes. The coronavirus did not stop Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders from debating Sunday night in a televised event without the usual live audience. But as AP White House correspondent Sagar Magani reports, the pandemic played a major role in the event.
Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders have used the latest Democratic debate to pitch themselves as best suited to lead the nation through the coronavirus pandemic. The nomination race has largely become an afterthought amid the crisis. In their first one-on-one debate aired on CNN, Biden and Sanders united in criticizing President Trump's handling of the pandemic, with Sanders saying the president simply needs to shut up.
It is unacceptable for him to be blabbering with unfactual information, which is confusing the general public.
They also came together on another topic, running mates.
I commit that I will, in fact, pick a woman to be vice president.
Sanders then said he will, in all likelihood, do the same. But his path to the nomination is dimming, with the prospect of more losses in four states voting, including Florida, as Biden has surged ahead. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Meanwhile, there are mounting concerns that the coronavirus pandemic could disenfranchise large numbers of American voters in the U.S. presidential election. As VOA's Brian Padden reports, two states have postponed primary elections, and there are new calls to expand vote-by-mail options to protect vulnerable populations and Democratic instructions. VOA's Brian Padden has that part of the story.
Primary elections in Georgia and Louisiana were to be held in late March and early April, but officials have postponed the polls because of the coronavirus threat.
We want to protect the health and safety of all Louisianians by doing our part to prevent the spread of this highly infectious disease.
The deadly outbreak has forced schools and businesses to close and the cancellation of public events as officials seek to contain the virus. Advisories against public gatherings have impacted the presidential campaign. Sunday's Democratic debate between former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was held without an audience present. To ensure polls continue during the crisis, Senator Juan Wyden, a Democrat from the state of Oregon, has introduced a bill to expand vote-by-mail options in all 50 states, a move voting rights groups have long advocated.
While the coronavirus is awful and our hearts go out to everyone suffering, this is ironically a unique opportunity to modernize and update our voting systems and make them work better for every American.
Currently, 34 states and the District of Columbia offer no excuse absentee voting by mail. Some, like Washington and Colorado, have eliminated in-person voting completely. Other states require a justification for requesting an early ballot, such as conflicting travel or work schedules. As the coronavirus threatens Democrats and Republicans alike, a safer voting alternative could attract bipartisan support. Brian Padden, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the other headlines and stories we are following at VOA. U.S. health officials say the first human trial has begun to test an experimental coronavirus vaccine as scientists race to find treatments for the pandemic. Scientists at Kaiser Permanente Washington Research Institute in Seattle gave the first shots Monday to a small group of healthy people. The U.S. National Institutes of Health said the trial would involve 45 healthy adult volunteers between the ages of 18 and 55 years old, who would be given the experimental vaccine over a six-week period. One of the U.S. military's largest exercises in Africa has been canceled due to the threat of the coronavirus. After already becoming significantly scaled down last week, U.S. Africa Command said Monday the decision to cancel the massive U.S.-led African Lion exercise was made out of an abundance of caution, based on both international travel restrictions and the desire to minimize the risk of service members being exposed to the coronavirus. The massive U.S.-led African Lion exercises in Morocco, Tunisia, and Senegal were supposed to involve 9,300 troops from eight nations in an effort to improve military readiness and integration while preparing to combat trans-regional threats. While African Lion 2020 has been canceled, planning continues for 2021. And Amazon said Monday it needs to hire 100,000 more people across the U.S. to keep up with a crush of orders as the coronavirus spreads and keeps more people at home and shopping online. The online retailer also said it will temporarily raise pay by $2 an hour through the end of April for hourly employees in the U.S. as well as in the U.K. and other European countries. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. After a short lull, things are heating up again in Iraq between the U.S. and Iranian allied militias carrying out a new round of attacks against one another following a rocket attack on Iraq's Camp Taji last week that killed one British soldier and two American troops. The U.S. had swiftly responded with airstrikes against Kataib Hezbollah, the pro-Iran militia. The group the U.S. blames for the attacks. Rockets struck the same base again Saturday. The Iraqi military released a statement criticizing the U.S. strikes, and Iraq's foreign minister summoned the U.S. ambassador to protest what was termed as American aggression. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shanawi discusses these developments with Colonel David DeRoche, associate professor at the Near East South Asia Center for security studies.
It's a real setback for de-escalation. You're right about that. What we're seeing is Iraq trying to keep pressure on the United States, trying to say that we dictate the pace of pressure, and really trying to push on what they know is the Trump's desire to leave Iraq, to get them to do it as quickly as possible and to do it on Iran's terms rather than America's terms.
The Iraqi military released a statement criticizing the U.S. strikes, and Iraq's foreign minister has summoned the U.S. ambassador to protest what was termed as American aggression. What do you make of that?
We have to realize, you know, the Iraqi government is not completely sovereign. So if you're in Baghdad, there are elements that are freely roaming around Iraq, and particularly the eastern parts of Baghdad, some of which are paid by the Iraqi government, but which are primarily loyal to Iran. And in light of the American strikes, which I think were less successful than hoped for, they were reported as hitting ammunition depots, but when you look at the central command photos, you don't see fires or secondary explosions. So, and there were reports that Iraqi policemen were killed instead of or alongside Kataib Hezbollah operatives. So it's normal to expect this sort of thing. I expect that it will be rather pro forma. And I think that this also explains why we haven't seen an additional American response to the second wave of Kataib Hezbollah missile firing, because we want to be sure we get the targets right this time.
The Iraqi government was contemplating a complaint to the UN Security Council over the U.S. attacks. What should be done to assert Iraq's control over internal security forces, aiming to prevent Iran, pro-Iranian groups, and the U.S. from targeting each other in Iraq, to establish rules of engagement that protect Iraqi sovereignty and prevent future escalation?
You put your finger right on the heart of the problem. I mean, here's the real problem, which is the United States has already shown once that it's perfectly happy to leave Iraq. The United States is constrained by law and genuinely wants a sovereign Iraq. Iran, on the other hand, does not want a sovereign Iraq. They want an Iraq that's subservient to it, that basically is a province. And in some parts of Iraq, they effectively have that situation under control. They want full freedom of movement. They want an ability to bypass any democratic processes. They want the ability to unilaterally employ force in Iraq without consulting with the Iraqi government. I think that given the extrajudicial nature of some of these Iraqi militias that it's quite possible that we have to view the Iraqi government to some extent as a hostage. And so we'll see measures like this, but I'm pretty sure that the dialogue we get in private with the Iraqis is different from the public statements that people have to make in Baghdad, because quite frankly, they're in fear of their life.
Would that reinforce the call for U.S. withdrawal as soon as possible?
You know, there's a dysfunctional thing here. Iran wants the United States out of Iraq, but the worst thing they can do is to attack American forces, because the U.S. government, particularly President Trump, doesn't want to be seen to be doing anything out of a state of weakness. The irony here is that if Iran and its proxies, and Qatar Hezbollah is a servant of Iranian interests, not Iraqi interests, if they really wanted the United States out, they should just be quiet, keep their head down, and allow us to lose interest, as we've done, and to withdraw. As the Secretary of Defense says, we need to focus on our prime competitors, which are China and Russia. So the Iranian strategy here really is dysfunctional, not just in terms of maintaining the peace in Iraq, which Iran doesn't really care about, but also in terms of advancing the Iranian strategic interests of getting the United States withdrawal from Iraq. So I think if after the next round of retaliation they say, okay, that's it, draw a line under it, then I think we'll be fine. You can never tell.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better.
Finally today, pop memorabilia, including Paul McCartney's scribbled notes for Hey Jude and Doris Day's piano, have been enjoying a sharp rise in online interest, possibly because so many people are cooped up at home under coronavirus lockdown. Darian Julian, president of U.S.-based Julian's Auctions, says activity, including bidder registrations, bids, and catalog orders, has been about 10 times higher than normal level ahead of two big auctions set to take place in April. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. Thank you so much for listening. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jackson Mugunganye, I'm Lori London in Washington. Please take care and be well.
Don't let me down. This is VOA News.